And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
The Kings within 3 yards of a game-winning touchdown, which would send them home to the championship game.
It was Marty Brown against Ohio State. Does he get another opportunity?
Three receivers bunch to the left. Beck is looking that way. And still looking. Takes off running. Carson Beck with his legs puts Miami on top. What a drive.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports King from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today is Wednesday, August 19th. This is episode 248. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look. Join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave your questions, comments. We'll respond. Tonight, we're still in the summer doldrums. We'll talk a little baseball. Then we're going to get started talking about some college football. We'll talk about the world of sports. We'll go around a couple of sports things going on. We'll get it started with some baseball. Locally, Yankees, before today, 70-55, 5 games behind Tampa Bay at 75-50. Yankees, 6-4 in their last 10. They've won 2 in a row before today. Second best record in the American League. It's only 5-6 teams that have 70 wins so far. Yankees are one of them. Darren?
Yeah, the American League's great because there's only 4 teams with winning records. You know, you just got to love the competitiveness. Right now, if the season were to end today, the Twins at 63-65 would have the final wild card by a percentage point over the Rangers, who are 62-64, also that exciting 2 games below 500. The Astros are a basic lock at 563-63. And we sit here and watch mediocre baseball. The Red Sox coming back to earth. The Rays aren't. And the White Sox take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. And you know what? Baseball's exciting in both leagues right now. But when you go through the Yankees, listen, the offense has struggled. I'd love to tell you it's kicked into gear. Really hasn't. You know, but the Helio Ramos move, I didn't understand the move of not wanting to play Dominguez. He hasn't hit. He got a hit tonight. Maybe it'll start him up. Maybe it'll get him going. Kind of like the Garcia move somewhat. Lombard hasn't been a monster, but he's been solid. I'm okay with it. He does make some exciting plays out in the field, and he does get a hit here and there, which is pretty good. Bednar's been unbelievable. Fried goes back on the DL. Rodon comes right off. Both starters go 4 innings the last 2 days, so we can watch this pen go a little longer. Doesn't get more exciting than that. And I still can't understand why they didn't upgrade the pen at least try to. But like Gino said, I mean, listen, they have the second best record in the American League. They're battling. Now it comes down to, will we see Fried again this year? Will we see him? Will we? When and if will Judge come back? I mean, that's what we're waiting for.
I mean, they're 15 games over. It's hard to not recognize that fact. They're doing this without Bellinger right now, without Judge, without Stanton in this lineup. It's 3 big bats. It's easy to see why Rice has struggled without those 3 bats in the lineup.
Starting to hit the last couple of days, though, right. So hopefully he gets him going.
I was just going to say that. He looks like he's coming around a little bit now, but it's easy to see why he struggled, why the lineup has struggled. I liked the Ramos move when they made it. I didn't think that was going to mean that they were going to send Dominguez down, but they did. You know, Lombard's been okay.
Grisham's been hot the last couple of days. Let's see if he continues it. They need to get Chisholm hitting. They need to get – I mean, the Wells thing has been bad all year. I don't know.
Yeah, the catcher position is the catcher position. You know, I don't see a lot of good bullpens around. The Yankees are mediocre at best, as well as everybody else's bullpen.
You know whose bullpen looks pretty good right now? The guys across the bridge to Queens right now.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, for a 3 week stretch, everybody's bullpen can look good or bad.
I'm just
saying,
Duarte's looks like he's unhittable. Senga looks like he belongs as a closer. I'm not saying it's a great bullpen. I'm saying that right now it looks like a good bullpen.
Yeah. Here's the one thing, and that is, as we get to the end of September, we'll see who's actually going to the pen and who will be in the pen. Hopefully, at that point, a couple of these starters will be out there, and they'll have a little bit more gas out there than they have right now.
You know who's looked great, though, G? Weathers has actually really solidified his spot right now. I mean, Warren would clearly be in the pen if Fried didn't get hurt right now.
I agree. I mean,
and it's not that Warren has been bad. It's just been that Weathers has suddenly, last few starts, has looked really, really strong.
Yeah.
Clark Schmidt's throwing. He should be back. He's a guy that can go into that pen. Luis Gil, he hasn't even sniffed the light of day this year. We don't even know what the story is with him.
Let me ask you, Fried on the DL right now. If he can come back and at least be able to build up to two innings, wouldn't that be another weapon in the bullpen?
Of course it would. Any one of these starters is better than what we're throwing out there back there right now. I think he's just getting tired. I think he's just pitched too much. Cruz is like, if he doesn't get the first pitch strike, he gives up a big hit. It's like, my God, it's hard to watch. But you're right, Kev. You're 100% right. It's another arm back there. Will Warren can be another arm back there. They have guys.
You need, depending on how the schedule works out, you need three, maybe four starters in the playoffs.
Well, you got to.
And the Yankees have how many? Five, six?
Kev,
everybody's healthy. I mean, I don't care who goes into the bullpen. If Freeze one of the ones instead, go ahead.
I think the issue as you start getting into middle September is who's healthy. I think that's what decides who's going to wind up out there. Is it a choice you're making, or is it based on I have these four and the fifth guy's going to be out there and the other two are still on the IL, or is it I have five healthy and the other two I'm going to play with and figure out who's going where? I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, listen, I hate saying this because Darren always gives me the look. But this is the August I feel like I'm in every year with this Yankee team, which is they're good enough to make the playoffs every year. This is where they are. They're 15 games over. Whether they're playing good or not, this is where they are. And
I'm just going to say the line I've been saying for the last month. You know there's a shot there's no season next year. You got to go all in a little bit more than he did. Okay. And the thing is, Kev, like you said, I mean, Schlittler's going to be in the rotation, okay? Yeah. He's probably going to win the Cy Young. I mean, maybe Cease, but Schlittler's the front runner right now.
Yeah, you got to say yes right now.
You know, Cole has already lengthened out to the point where you're not worried about him going seven at all, right?
Right.
Rodon is, I think, not built to relieve, whether you love him as a starter or not, three. Fried coming back, I don't really know. So the fourth starter is going to be the question mark for this team. And to decide to go. Who pitches the best over the next month?
Well,
I may not need him until the second round.
You're 100% right. Hopefully we don't.
Well, I think Schlittler and Cole are your 1-2. And then I think it's really, is Rodon healthy at that point? You know, like Rodon.
We got to see if he stretches out.
No, I know. But between Rodon and Fried, and they, I feel like we're going back and forth on the IL with these guys. So who's actually healthy at that point in time, I think, is going to determine who's actually,
who's healthy and who's pitching best. I mean, if Weathers continues to pitch like he's pitching, it's really hard to take him out. But at the beginning of the year, if you would have told me Weathers was going to be the one of the guys, I would have laughed at you.
Yeah.
You know, I would have thought heel over Weathers, to be honest, to start the season. So, listen, there's a lot of good things with the Yankee team and the fact that they're winning games without the lineup. The guys that are there not really producing, and the guys that are not there – are such big names and such big bats that they're missing, and it hurts, and you're surprised that they're kind of maintaining. But you know, there's a lot of work to be done. We have a fun 6 weeks of the season left. We're gonna see what happens with it.
Stanton's nice to get back. Bellinger's nice to get back. You need Judge.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what it comes down to. If Judge is not healthy, that's
you can't do anything without Judge.
You can't do anything without Judge.
I got a strange suspicion that we're not going to see Judge until the last week or two of the season, if that. So I don't think we're seeing Judge before that.
The other exciting thing is, if it does happen, how much better does Garcia look and Rice look with those three bats in the lineup? With I mean, it's going to be where it's going to be where it's I still don't love what they're doing leadoff. Gino's been talking about it all season. I don't like it. Gino hates it with what they do with the leadoff, and he's right. I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd love to see some consistency up there. Just you know, I know everybody's got the nerds doing the freaking you know, the stats and stuff like that. But let's get a leadoff hitter up there. Let's let him play, and it only makes Chisholm better. And you know, listen, you know, even Austin Wells, you can see the Buck 90 Tim Laudner fan club coming out. You know, we all remember it when the Twins won the first one in what was it, 85? Or was it 87? They won 87. It was 85 with the Royals. Yeah, 85 was the Royals. 87 and 91 were their World Series. The Tim Laudner Buck 90 fan club. We all remember that. I mean, so it's possible for those guys to come around and hit because you have to face them because you can't afford to put them on with the other bats in the lineup. But like Gino said at least five times tonight, because he's right, it's going to be about health. If they come back, we're going to see where we're at. Gino was already like, come on. There it is. Just, they're going to have to be healthy. And you're right. You're 100% right. They got to be healthy. So, well, while we're on this, why don't we talk about the other side of the river there, Mr. Ward?
Actually, a little bit more fun in the last couple of weeks here. 11-4 since the trading deadline. Did it just loosen them up? Did they get past the trade deadline when they knew half the team was going to be gone? But the bullpen, like you said, Darren, has been pitching lights out with a bunch of no-names.
Lavender has surpassed Lovelady. I mean, he's just better.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Come on. Lavender at least was a prospect.
I'm just going with the masculine last name.
The names? Yeah. I mean, I know that.
But and Duarte's looked unhittable. I'll be honest. He looks great.
Yeah. He throws strikes. It's nice to see a reliever come and just throw strikes.
I agree with you.
And Senga, you know, so far 4-for-4. I mean, it's been great. You know, but it's amazing. You know, you look at Monday night. I mean, just one of those weird pitching lines. And I'm sorry, Darren, for bringing this up. It was against your Padres. But the first
two innings, some of the worst third base coaching I've ever seen in my life. Anyway,
how often do you guys see a starting pitcher, two innings, five hits, two walks, a hit by pitch, and only give up one run.
And the first batter of the game hit the line drive, almost took his head off.
Yeah.
You know, listen, the Bogart send, I understood. It was a close play. Ewing got him. Great play. Benj's arm is a cannon. I'm not downplaying. But I think almost any average, average right fielder throws either one of those guys out by a little closer, but Alvarez is waiting for him.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like awful to watch. I was like, oh my God.
Especially back-to-back plays. It was the same exact play both times.
They're hitting them hard, and it means nothing.
Just you know, between hit Ben's two in the first inning and Ewing in the second inning, that was three outs at home plate. You know, Elias has gone back to 1920 and can't find that ever happening.
God, it's freaking, so, it was great, actually. I mean, listen. As a guy watching the game, I mean, and wanting to see Carson Bench become a great player, I enjoyed why I was mad that they were thrown out, but I'm enjoying watching Bench and Ewing and because you want to see what these guys can do, and not that Ewing has been bad, but Bench has really risen to the occasion, in my opinion, out of the two guys. He's a little bit older too. He's a little bit more advanced, and I think it shows. The maturity shows.
I've written here. You know, you're seeing Bench get better day by day. The glove is really coming along. The arm is great. The hitting-wise, he's in the 270s. 15 home runs, 15 steals. The only other Met rookie to do that was Darryl.
He's good.
I mean, if he has a career anywhere like Darryl, you'd sign up for that in a heartbeat, minus the drugs.
Listen, they go 32-2 down the stretch. They get to 90 wins. I mean, there's a lot of excitement here with this team. Gino's got the countdown. Gino's got the wall behind him where he pulls down the number.
Is this taking the bikini, the dress off in Major League?
Absolutely.
Except it's not Steve Cohen's picture behind it.
We're going to need 32-2 to get to 90. And 90 in the National League is not as easy to get into the playoff as it is in the American League. 90 in the American League, you win the West by 7 games. In the National League, it's a different animal.
And the only other bet, though, they have, luckily we don't have to see him again this year. Polanco's on the disabled list. He's getting the surgery on his bursitis in the left ankle, so he's done for the year. Thank God we don't have to watch another pitiful at bat by Mr. Polanco for the rest of the season?
And an awkward question for both of you guys, and it's early, so obviously the opinion can change. The Dodgers almost look kind of beatable right now. Or is it just me? I thought that they would – they're still great. I'm not saying they're not. But the problem with the Dodgers is I think for someone to get them, it's going to have to be a wild card team because I don't have any faith in the Braves or the Brewers either. If the Brewers made the Scooble trade, I'd be all in with Miz and Scooble and whoever, Spawn and Sane and Pray for Rain. I'd be all in with this whole thing. But the fact that they refused to do it, just they didn't want to have to give up Mane. They wouldn't have to give up their number one prospect. I just still don't get it. But the Dodgers look like they're gettable, Kev.
Shohei's not quite healthy, so he's not pitching at all. So you don't know about the knee, if it's affecting. Look at the numbers, they're fine. But, you know, it's not Shohei-like numbers that we've seen. Kyle Tucker's been a disaster. Now he's dropping fly balls in right field. I mean,
which was never his problem. He's always had a good glove.
And now he's crying in the dugout because he's playing so badly. I mean, I'm not making fun of him crying, but just the fact that it's gotten to the point where he's a mental case. Diaz is back on the IL with the inflammation in the neck this time. And so now you're back to Tanner Scott, who, you know, can be a little shaky at times. And you know, that bullpen, again, not great. There's some holes in that team. Somebody could get them.
Gino.
I don't buy it for one goddamn minute. They're 15 games over. I think they are running through the whole goddamn National League.
I think the Phillies are dangerous. I think either the Padres or the Diamondbacks could be slightly dangerous. The Diamondbacks have played well against them.
I agree with all of that, and I think the Dodgers are running through all of them.
All right. And I think the Cubs are actually a very fun team to watch.
Yep.
Whether you think they're great or not. I mean, the PCA trade will be a daunting Met freaking trivia question, much like the Willie McGee trade was for a few years with the Yankees and Bob Sykes. This is that kind of trade.
But you get in the damn playoffs, and the Dodgers, all of a sudden, they have a bench full of guys who become freaking Orlando Duque in the playoffs all of a sudden.
His name is Tommy Edman, and he doesn't make a mistake in the playoffs. Yeah. The Padres had him on the brink last year, let him off the hook. Remember that. They almost got knocked out early, but they didn't. You're 100% right. You know, they did. They won, so it doesn't matter. I'm hoping to find a reason for the Dodgers to lose. I might be reaching, and I'm still mad because Scooble hasn't been great, but the Tigers have been pretty good since they traded him. Can't imagine that and lasting. I just don't trust the Brewers in a big spot because they haven't shown they can do it. The Phillies have cut it, so they're within five in the loss column of the Braves. You never know if they catch him. I don't know. The Braves don't scare me either, to be honest with you. Chris Sale, and that's about it. I guess they're the Tommy John, Kev.
Yeah, passed away. I mean, it sounded like it was going to be pretty soon. Old Timers Day, he'd issued the statement, you know, thank you for letting me express my gratitude, everything else. It sounded like he was probably, without knowing the details, sounded like he was probably in hospice and near the end, and you know, it came earlier in the week. And, you know, of course, the surgery.
Yeah,
we all know that. The first guy to have it done and come back and pitch. I mean, he was great after the surgery. That sinker ball, I mean, no, it was unhit. It was beaten to the ground. I remember a game, what was it, against the Twins, like 20 ground outs?
Yep, it was ridiculous.
I mean,
Gene, is he a Hall of Famer with the 288 wins? Has he been overlooked?
Yes.
As a compiler?
Yes.
Kev, you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, he was eight short. I mean, 12 short. My math is off tonight. You know, 12 more wins and he's in because of 300. But, you know, to me, it's
being – because he came back from what he came back from, too, I think.
Yeah. I think because he revolutionized having the surgery, being able to come back, being the first one to do it, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Do you realize he's got 288 wins? You know he's got 46 shutouts.
He was a good pitcher.
Yeah.
The thing about Tommy John, he had this slow delivery. He always looked like he was throwing like 68. Like we could go up there, maybe get a poke off him. But major leaguers couldn't do it. Yeah. And you know what? He was a good. He looked old when he was young. He was just one of those guys. You know, like Wilbur Wood looked old from the minute I saw. You know, certain guys just look old out there. Tommy John always looked old, but, you know, he came back from something that no one ever came back from. When they named the surgery after you, you've done something correct.
I mean, you know, his strikeouts per inning gets deflated because he pitched so many innings.
Yep.
He pitched 4,710 innings.
Just a great pitcher.
Okay. I mean, he had 2,245 strikeouts, but it looks minute compared to the number of innings he pitched, because he pitched 4,700 innings, for God's sakes.
You know, it's funny. We make fun of the Hall of Fame, because when we were kids, we expected it to be only greatness, and now it's become the Hall of the Very Good. Yep. If it's the Hall of the Very Good, Tommy John belongs in it. I'm sorry. He was very good. I never called him great, but he was very good.
Kev, how many years would somebody have to pitch 4,700 innings now?
Oh, they're lucky when they get to 150. I mean, that's 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even if you get the Bulldogs that go 210.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, my God. But yeah, great career.
He's got a great career.
And then while we're staying with baseball players that unfortunately passed, Butch Husky, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking. You know,
he's young guy.
Well, he's younger than me. I think he's about
he's our age. He's me and G's age.
You know, one of the last numbers, one of the last number 42s in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Came up. I mean, just very Mark Vientos like. You know,
looked I like think that's the Butch Husky.
But you know,
I just died. When you gonna piss on the grave, Kev? What are we doing?
But you don't
I understand what you're saying, and I think Husky was better when the teams had brawls back in the day, because Husky was really he would really mix it up pretty good. He was a tough kid.
I mean, Met fans always liked Butch, and sad to see that he passed away at, you know, what, 55, 54, yeah, somewhere around
55,
there.
55, I believe.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it's just a sad thing. But so we lost a couple of major leaguers that obviously had a, you know, an impact of this area. As Tommy pitched a lot for the Yankees, Dodgers, of course, and other teams, and Butch was a Met primarily. So,
yep,
the way it goes. Anything else on baseball? Oh, Kev, you got some gems, no?
I have some gems. You mentioned the name earlier. Met fans hate to bring up this name, but Pete Crow Armstrong Monday night.
PCA, baby.
I mean, did he take the MVP lead right now with that performance, a leadoff home run and a walk-off home run in extra innings?
He's right there.
So he did it Monday. Only the sixth official time it's happened in baseball. Chris Young for Arizona in 2010. Ian Kinsler for Texas in 2009.
The German.
Reed Johnson for Toronto in 2003.
Well, everybody's all American.
Darren Erstad in that great 2000 year did it for the Angels.
Finished eighth in the MVP voting. You couldn't have done more than Darren Erstad did. Finished eighth.
254 hits.
He finished eighth. That's, and the other guys didn't suck. It wasn't like they didn't vote for him. He was amazing that year. And with the glove.
And the only one prior to the century, Vic Power on the Kansas City A's.
Gino was a big fan. He used to have a Power jersey back in the day.
1957, and here's something you won't see ever again. He hit both of them off Hal Brown from the Orioles. You're never going to see a guy give up a leadoff and a walk-off in the same game ever again.
If the guy goes a complete game, you feel like you stole something.
Well, it's funny. You know, one of the ones that was an asterisk, and they went back and looked. Billy Hamilton of the 1893 Philadelphia Phillies.
Wrong Billy Hamilton. Okay. I was like, that kid never – I don't think he hit two homers in his career.
Home game for the Phillies, hit one in leading off the game, hit one in extra innings, which gave the Phillies the lead. Except there was a rule back then. Did you know up until the early 1900s, extra inning game, the home team had the choice to hit first or second once the game went to extra innings?
No, I had no idea until just now. I was today years old when I learned that one, Kevin.
There you go. I was yesterday days old. I was reading that. I was like, wow, that was an interesting rule change there or old rule. So Hamilton hit the home run in the top of the 10th, even though they were home.
That's funny. Oh, wow. That's great.
Yep. Milwaukee last night, 22-0 over the Mariners.
It was close for a while.
Yep. Matches the Pirates in 75 and Cleveland in 04 for the largest shutout victories this since 1900. You have to go back to the 1887 Philadelphia Quakers, 24-0 over the Indianapolis Hoosiers.
Well, it makes sense now. Now we know where the Hoosiers got their name.
9 runs off Leo Rivas in the bottom of the eighth, the backup infielder. So up 22-0. Here comes Gary Sanchez to come in and pitch the ninth inning for Milwaukee. Doesn't feel like this year you see more and more and more position players pitching. I mean, you've got 13-man pitching staffs.
It doesn't make any sense because everybody goes three batters and then they're out.
Yeah. Well, they used to have loogies that would go one batter.
It's ridiculous.
Now let's get to the negatives here. Some negative stats. You know, Kyle Raleigh playing that game. Realize this year, 92 games, hitting 157. He's got 52 hits for the whole season after hitting 60 home runs last year.
I saw that because it was an interesting stat I saw, which you might have, that Judge has 53 and he hasn't played since about April or May or whatever the hell it was. And he's got 52 the whole season. Cal Raleigh was like, I mean, this is like the Brett Boone. What happens in Seattle? You get one good year and then it falls apart?
Has there ever been a bigger drop-off from one year to the next in Major League history? I mean, that's about as bad as it comes.
We used to make fun of Kevin Moss a lot, right? I mean, you know, like he had that one year where he came out and then, you know, he just didn't even belong in baseball after that. But this is something that's tragic.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And in the negative stats, Hyesun Kim, playing for the Braves now. Always known for great defense, right?
Absolutely.
He handled the bat a little bit, right? 240.
Smack it around. Absolutely, yeah. Slap it.
This year in 85 plate appearances, he has an 0.66 batting average.
Wow.
He has a 165 on base and 0.66 slugging.
Jeez, that's so hard to do.
They went back. There were 45,719 times a player has come to bat at least 85 times in the season. He is 45,719th in batting average.
God.
In slugging. And he is 45,718th in OPS.
Oh, my God.
This may be the single worst season ever for a hitter.
I was a little bummed out when the Pods lost him. Now I'm not.
Just for the record, Ron Karkovice popping champagne bottles. Back in 1987, he hit 0.71. So if Kim can keep this up, you know, 0.66 might set the new record.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So those are my little gems for the night.
All right, cool.
That's some crazy stuff, man. Wow. All right. Football almost here. We're going to start talking a little college football. We're going
to
start
Before we do that, Gino, just to ask you, because it's an important thing, we're not going to touch on the SEC today. Is Jaden Daniels acting like a complete moron that somebody's using his number 5 in a college? I mean, I've never seen a guy have such an outrageous thing. I mean, you know, you didn't win a national championship down there. Am I crazy? I like Jaden Daniels. I mean, he spends too much time with his mom and the whole thing. But but what is this big deal that he doesn't want anyone to wear number 5 ever again? You tell me. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, I don't think you're missing anything.
I was stunned by that. I thought I was reading a joke. I thought it was a spoof. Then I saw some other thing. I think it had to be a spoof where he won't do high fives with anybody because of the 5. So he's making everybody do fist bump. I don't know if that's true or not. I didn't confirm it. I didn't watch it. But if that's the case, I would laugh my ass off. That is unbelievable. I'm just surprised because he's a classy kid, and you didn't expect it. I didn't expect it from him.
We've all liked Jaden Daniels. We loved watching him in LSU.
Oh, absolutely. He's been
great to watch for the first two years with the Commanders. It's just been it was ridiculous.
I was stunned by that.
Oh, Joe Burrow. Nobody gives out Joe Burrow's number. Well, Joe Burrow won the Heisman, won 15-0, and won that, and the Natty.
He won the Natty. He wears number 9. I'm sorry, you're not Joe Burrow yet.
Yeah.
Listen, you win the Super Bowl that Joe hasn't won. Maybe they'll retire your number in the NFL. That might be more important right now. But you didn't win in college. You did win, but you didn't win, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
I saw that, and I was thinking, I got to ask Gino about this because I couldn't believe it. And I know you love Daniels, and you should. He's a great player. I'm just like,
wow. I do. It's a very weird situation. Maybe he's a little pissed because he didn't get any NIL money back then, but I don't know.
Somehow, some way, I'm sure he got a little bit of money. Anyway, I'm not going to get into it, though. I don't know. I can't prove it. And maybe he did nothing. But I have a hunch that all these guys, somehow, some way, still made a little bit of money. But they're just not making as much money as they are today.
Yep.
I agree.
So where do we want to go? We want to finish up a little NFL, or do we want to go right to the college?
Finish up the NFL.
Absolutely. Kev, Breece Hall gave us a scare.
Yeah. Groin injury in practice this week. Looks like.
Thank God, because when I hear non-contact went down, had to be helped off, all we think is Achilles.
Yeah.
First thing that comes to your head is Achilles, right? Tell me you didn't when you first read it. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
I get the little alert on my phone. Breece Hall goes down untouched. Call it a season. It was a season anyway. We're not going anywhere anyway, but still.
The Vinny flashbacks. Even Aaron Rodgers.
Vinny game against the Pats, you know, all the way through. Oh, God.
Yeah, luckily, you know, it sounds like 2 or 3 weeks. Probably could have been playing before that if they really needed him regular season, but let's make sure he's healthy. You know,
I agree. And
as long as Braylon Allen's healthy and watching the game Friday night, yes, it's against backups, but Allen looked like Braylon Allen.
Yeah,
he's that quick burst, and
he's big.
the speed, the quickness with that size. Ugh. Makes you wonder what we can do on offense if Geno can just be decent.
And we're going to get into our NFL previews in the next couple of weeks. But the one thing is, I mean, everything for this team is built toward 27, and yep. We know that. It's based on the 3 first-round picks and the second-round pick and what we're going to do with it all. But, you know, you're looking right now at the team, and again, long way to go. And, you know, and you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, well, next year is going to be about the quarterback, hopefully a center, for crying out loud, and some depth. And, yeah. and that's what we're trying to build with. I mean, it'd be kind of fun to actually feel like we built the team from the bottom up. Yep. Let's see if that's the case, because it's only gonna be successful if the quarterback they get is going to be the guy. And I know people say, hey, they might have it with Klubnik. All right, take a deep breath. There's a reason why he was drafted the way he was drafted. It happens sometimes. Doesn't happen a ton. So there's only one Tom Brady, everybody. And I hate to break it to everybody.
Between Klubnik, Zappi, and Cook the other night, he looked the best.
By a lot.
That's a pretty low bar to clear when you're talking Zappi and
Zappi Cook. Doesn't belong in the NFL, and neither does Cook. No. So at least Klubnik, well, I know he took the clear number 2 spot. I mean, yes, you know, if Geno goes down, we might not win a game.
Very true. If Geno's healthy, we may have 4 or 5 wins.
Listen, this is a team that could be better with the same record. And that's what I kind of viewed him at. But we'll get more into it as we get closer. I know that there's a lot to cover in the NFL. Geno's very excited about what his Commanders are going to do this year. And he should be. They've made moves. Kevin and I are excited about what the Jets are going to do. And yet neither one of us think they're going to make the playoffs. But we are excited about, we think we're going to be more competitive at least.
I can see him losing a whole bunch of 2017 games this year rather than 31-10.
Exactly. And we're going to break it down. We're going to, obviously, if you've ever listened to us before, you'll know Kevin and I will talk about the Jets at nauseam until Geno makes a stop and says, there's 31 other teams in the league. Why don't we talk about them a little bit?
Why?
Why talk about a team that's going to get 4 wins for an hour when we can talk about everybody? And Geno's right. So we'll have to do that as we go.
Even tonight, 5 minutes on the Jets, even though we have no plans to talk about them. Here we go.
Well, Breece Hall's injury was a little exciting, so we had to touch on that. One real quick point in the NBA just before we go into the college football rank, just to get this thing out of the way, because why not? There's a trade today. And, you know, again, it's not like you're sitting there with, like, the greatest players of all time, but the Cavaliers, the Nuggets, and the Clippers have agreed to send a trade. Peyton Watson goes to Cleveland. Max Strus goes to the Clippers, and an unprotected 2031 Cavs draft pick and a 2032 Kings second round pick, Gino. They go to Denver per Shams Charania. Cavs deal, Peyton Watson then signs a new 4-year, $88 million deal. Clippers just get Max Strus. And apparently the Nuggets, even with this trade, are still in the second apron. So we're going to find out. They're going to be doing more from what I understand, but this is what we know about with the NBA right now. So NBA staying relevant besides LeBron going to Philly. Again, you know, listen, we're going to see Cleveland's trying to – everybody thinks the East can be had. That's what it comes down to. Despite the Knicks being the champion, you know, Philly's made their moves. Cleveland's making a move. We're going to see everybody making a few moves. Washington tried to improve themselves. We're going to find out what everybody's going to do here.
Yep.
All right. Gino, where are we going next?
Well, we're going to talk a little college football.
All right.
What conference do you guys want to start it? I guess you want to start it with the SEC.
Well, Kev's got a big picture behind him about the stadium that he loves, so I think we should.
College football starts and ends with the SEC, doesn't it?
Well, they haven't won a championship in a while, so I would say no.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. You know, they've got all the preseason hype as usual.
And they should, by the way. There's a lot of great talent in this league.
27 players on the preseason AP All-American team, first team, including your special teams. SEC, 14 of the 27. Texas with four of them. So the talent's there. You look at both polls, the AP and the coaches. Ohio State, Oregon, and 1-2 from the Big Ten. Seven of the next 11 from 3 to 13 are SEC. And then you throw in Tennessee, Missouri are in the top 25. And you got four of the teams and the others receiving votes. I mean, almost everybody's mentioned. As usual, deep, as usual. You look at the schedule again to that towards the end. You know, every week you've got a matchup that you go, wow, that's going to be the matchup for the weekend. And, you know, where do you want to start, Darren?
Georgia's won the conference championship a couple of years in a row. Last year was an interesting Georgia team, right? They did it without a pass rush,
yeah,
which we hadn't seen. And they've lost their weapons on the outside a little bit. They brought in some reinforcements, don't get me wrong.
Of course, yeah.
But Gunnar Stockton, and he's pretty good. I mean, he's a good quarterback. I think he gets overlooked a lot, but he's a winner kind of quarterback. And it was just that the Georgia defense couldn't stop Ole Miss. Otherwise, Georgia moves on last year in the playoff. We remember that being a great game, right, Jay? I mean, that was a thriller going back and forth. When Geno's into the college football playoff, we know we have a good playoff going on, and Geno was all in.
Yep.
And he was winning money at the same time. He was having a good time.
I was.
But the question, Georgia last year, right, Kev, when you watch this team, it seemed like they were putting things into gears. Like, they would allow teams to stay in. Things we weren't used to. No pass rush. Things we weren't used to. You know, back seven's good, still good. I mean, it's not going to get any worse there, but the defense is still young. Is Georgia, in your opinion, is Georgia should be the favorite, or is it really somebody else that you think should be the favorite in this league right now?
Right now, I'd go with another team as a favorite. I mean, Georgia's schedule is not too difficult compared to a lot of the other SEC teams. You know, they do get they're traveling to Alabama. They have to travel to Ole Miss, but those are the two tough games. You know, if they split those, listen, there's no reason why
they go to the stadium behind you, by the way, too. I mean, it's not like it's an easy game at the Bryce before you downplay it, because South Carolina is a different South Carolina team this year if they get line play.
Hopefully.
So I'm just saying that's not a game that I would say that Georgia walks through like it's nothing.
You know, what was interesting last year was just the fact, like you said, everybody just stayed in the game against Georgia. And if their defense improves at all over last year, they can the path is there for them to win and get to the SEC championship game at the very least. Mm-hmm. Yep. And obviously make the CFP. But no, you know, but you look at, you know, the team there, you know, Texas. I mean, we know Arch Manning. I mean, say what you want, you know, all the hype around Manning, he played better every week, it felt like, during the season. The second half of the year, he was phenomenal.
Was he great against the good teams?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting. This year, he gets it right off his bat when he gets
last year, he got it right off the bat, and Ohio State made him look like he couldn't do anything. And it's not to insult him. I mean, Ohio State does it to everybody, right? But
that was a hell of a place to play your first ever game as a starter, going to the Shoe. So at least this time around, they get them back at home. You know, like I said, I mean, you look at, you know, they've got Goosby at tackle, Cam Coleman at wide receiver, on defense, they've got Simmons at the edge, and they've got Biles at linebacker. I mean, they've got All-Americans, two All-Americans on both sides of the ball, on the line, in the middle, at skill positions. Arch Manning, who, you know, let's face it, if he comes out next year, is likely at worst the second pick overall, maybe first. Everything's there for Texas to, you know, as long as Manning, like you said, steps up his game and, you know, plays well against the good teams.
You know, they get a little Muschamp back to run the defense, which I think is an listen, you know, the defense was good last year, but Will Muschamp's like, it's like the NFL when North Turner comes in and takes over your offense. You're like, all right, they're going to be good. They're going to move the ball. This is kind of that feel a little bit with Will Muschamp, in my opinion.
Yeah. The only issue with them is going to be that schedule. I mean, right now it looks like, you know, they've got about 7 or 8 games against teams in the top 20. So it's a brutal schedule.
It's the SEC, most teams are going to have rough schedules, but theirs is particularly like, it's almost Florida-esque the last 3 years, if you want to put it that way. Florida's been the team that's got beaten up so badly. I mean, but you have Ohio State. You have to go to Tennessee. You got Oklahoma in the, you know, in the Red River rivalry. Red River,
yep.
Florida, you got Ole Miss, who's going to be good. You got to go to Missouri and LSU back-to-back. And you got to end it at A&M. I mean, it's you know, you got to earn it, you know? I mean, it's not going to be easy for them. Is there another team that you look at, Kev, that you think can sneak up on these top two? And you can say you're allowed to be proud. It's all right. You can say.
No, I'm gonna go with, you know, I'm gonna go with an A&M type, because, you know, when you look at Marcel Reed and what he can do, and he's got the weapon outside with Mario Craver, but Reed, when he's on, my God, he's fun to watch, and he can make plays. Throwing the ball, running the ball, and, you know, they're another team. Another brutal schedule. I mean, they go to at LSU. They're at Alabama, at Oklahoma, Texas at
Missouri.
Home. Tennessee. Missouri's
a top 25 team, man. I mean, that's a tough game, too.
Yeah. But, you know, again, they've got the talent. It's a matter of putting it together.
The thing is, Mike Elko's a defensive genius, right? I mean, he just does a good job, always getting the defense ready. Reed was great, but he did throw 12 picks. So he's got to mature. He's got to be just a little bit strong, because that game, that 10-3 loss to Miami, I mean, a couple of those interceptions were a little like not on him completely, but you know, he threw the big one late, which hurt. Craver, like you said, is a big time guy. O-line replaces 4 starters. Always makes me nervous. I know they bring in, they have the money to, Texas A&M has the money to bring in whoever they want.
Yeah.
But that's the key thing. And, you know, they're going to have to, they had a ton of pressure from the edges last year. It's going to be a big thing if A&M can do that again. But they're going to be good. Schedule's tougher, though. But I think if Reed progresses, he could be a player. You know, a team that I think is going to be sleepy? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, how about the two teams that match up week 3 when Lane Kiffin brings his LSU team into Ole Miss?
Well, Lane Kiffin is the most hated guy in college football right now. I mean, I don't think there's any way around it. I think he likes it. I think he takes great pride in being hated. I mean, listen, I mean, there are people that are predicting LSU to be in that conference final. I mean, it'll be in the championship game. There are people that love LSU this year. Are you one of them, Kev?
No, because you get into October, back-to-back-to-back weeks, home for the first two, but they home for Alabama, home for Texas, and at Tennessee 3 straight weeks.
The Ole Miss game, which is emotional. Even the Clemson game to kick off the season is not an easy game. Like, this is the fun one. This is one for Geno, okay? Both team of the Tigers, they both play in Death Valley.
Yep.
There's something fun about that. It's going to be at LSU, but there's something fun when they have the same nickname and their stadium is called the same thing, and it's a great game to kick off the weekend to. And like you said, I mean, you got Alabama, Texas at Tennessee. You got Auburn on the road, which is never easy, no matter who it is. And you got A&M early, and you got to go to Ole Miss in an emotional game in week 3. I mean, plus Clemson. I mean, that's not an easy schedule.
But, you know, they're bringing in Sam Leavitt, who we know can throw the ball around real well. And, you know, Lane Kiffin's going to have that offense humming.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I just think that it's a lot of transfers. And anytime you're bringing in over 30 transfers on a team, they usually don't gel that quickly. They brought in this all-world left tackle from Colorado. They brought in Leavitt, like you said. The secondary is stacked. They brought the kid from Boise, who's a stud. They've got a good defensive line. It's going to come down to I mean, Lane Kiffin's offenses are Lane Kiffin's offenses. They just go. I mean,
yeah.
It's going to be – a lot of guys have gone down there to Baton Rouge. Not a lot of them have won championships. So let's see if Lane Kiffin's the guy. Hard to like him. Abandons his team right before the playoff. He's a prick. I don't know how else to put it, G. He's just not a likable guy.
Made everybody love Pete Golding and Ole Miss in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Trinidad Chambliss. You know, he got his injunction. He's back for a sixth year.
They got Lacey back at running back, who's a beast. The defense has a lot of changes on it.
Yep.
And we're going to find out if Golding's really the guy. Did he just inherit? Is he Steve Fisher and he takes Michigan all the way through to the next level? Or is he, you know, a coach that comes in for 1 year like Arnett did at Mississippi State for Mike Leach in the bowl game, and then all of a sudden it falls apart and gets fired after 1 year? We're going to find out what Golding is as the head coach because he did it with Kiffin's players last year. Had to bring it back with his own. G?
Okay, so this was the team I picked out of all of the over-unders.
Yep.
As my best bet over-under.
Okay.
The over-under is 8.5. I have it written down already. Which way do you guys think I went?
Under.
I was thinking under as well.
I picked the over.
Okay. So Gino's all in on Ole Miss.
No, LSU. We're talking LSU. Sorry,
I thought you were talking about Ole Miss.
LSU. No, LSU.
Okay. I'm still under on them too, by the way.
8.5?
Eight and a half.
I think they get to 9. I can see 9-3.
I'm going to go 8-4. So the team I like that I think is going to be sneaky good in this league is Tennessee. I think that the bright orange is going to be better than the burnt orange this year. I think they're just going to have a little bit of a better record. Tennessee has, you know, there's something interesting about this team. And it's not that they're great by any stretch because they're certainly not. But – you know, Heupel does great things with these quarterbacks. He gets a lot out of them. He's really, really good. They're playing probably – it's going to probably be the redshirt freshman McIntyre that gets the win. He's ahead of Staub. He's ahead of Faison Brandon right now. So you figure he got it. Deshaun Bishop is back at 1,100 yards last year. Wide receiver, they bring in Brazil and Staley back. They lead the way. The old line returns 4 starters. I like teams that bring back linemen. I just think that that's a big part of what I like. But the thing I like most – is they bring in Jim Knowles as the defensive coordinator. He didn't do great at Penn State last year, but he won at Ohio State, and Penn State just fell apart. I don't think it had anything to do with him. They also bring in Amari Campbell from Penn State. So if the secondary improves like I expect that it will, Tennessee always finds rushers. They always find guys that can get to the quarterback. Schedule's not easy, like we talked about. They have to go to Georgia Tech week 2. They got Texas and Auburn at home. That's a big game for them, the Texas game. Texas has that sandwiched in between. They have it right before the Oklahoma game. So it's like, will they overlook that a little bit? Auburn to get at home. Alabama to get at home on the third Saturday in October. At Texas, A&M is rough. They get LSU at home. I like the fact they don't have a lot of brutal road games in their schedule. They play good teams, but they get them in Knoxville. And I'm going to give them a shot to get – I think they're gonna finish 10-2. I think that Tennessee is gonna be a team that people are gonna sleep on a little bit.
All right, Kev.
South Carolina. One thing you didn't mention that we always mention every year, Alabama.
I'm gonna give you the stat of the year, Gino. You're gonna love this one, right? So in his first 2 years as a coach at Alabama, Nick Saban won 19 games. They won the Natty in year 3.
Yep.
In his first 2 years, Gene Stallings won 18 games. They won the Natty in year 3. The Bear won 20 through 3 years, won the Natty in year 4. The Boars won 20 through 2 games. Does this trend continue? It's an interesting – I'm not saying this is not your big brother's Alabama team. They've slipped since Saban has stepped down. And the fact of the matter is Alabama runs the ball and this team doesn't run the ball. And that's what makes you nervous about them. But the board's a hell of a coach. Quarterback play is a question. It's probably going to be Austin Mack from Washington, but it could be Keelan Russell too. They're not really sure which way they're going. I hear back and forth reports on it. Russell's a redshirt freshman. He's super talented. Daniel Hill's a powerhouse running back, but they don't run the ball well. They have to run it more. O-line has transfers. There's questions about this team. but it's still Alabama, Kev.
How many times last year did you see 30 carries, 30 yards for the team?
Just Alabama.
You know, and after being spoiled by Saban winning national championships all the time, like I said, the Boers won 20 games in 2 years, but at what point does Alabama start saying, where's our natty?
No, I agree with you. The funny thing is, like, they had Yanze Pierre. He's back, the defensive end. Nobody even talked about this guy. This guy had, like, 13 sacks last year. I mean, that's how under the radar Alabama was as a 10-win team. And don't forget, they had a great comeback against Oklahoma in the playoff. They were down 17, and they stormed back to win that game. You know, this is it's an interesting team. And if you would have told us before the beginning of last year, and I'm going to mention both guys, that Ty Simpson and Fernando Mendoza were the two top quarterbacks in college football going into the season, and they were the two highest drafted, no one would have believed you.
Nope. And again, we talk about stretches here. Home for Georgia, at Tennessee, home for A&M.
It's brutal.
I mean, you know, like, you go week by week by week. The SEC may have the game of the week.
I think you're right. I think you're really right. I mean, because listen, we haven't even touched on the other playoff team, which is Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma is good. Brent Venables is good. And here's what happened last year. Mateer got hurt. He's healthy now. Yeah. They were expecting Mateer to set records. But now he's healthy. So now we have to see what Oklahoma is able to do in their schedule. They have to go to Michigan in week two. They go to Georgia in week four. They get to play Texas on the neutral site in week after the open date. Have to go to Florida. They got A&M late. They have to finish at Missouri. Another brutal schedule. But Oklahoma's defense is going to be unbelievable again. Brent Venables went from hot seat to maybe coach of the year type candidate for this year. A lot of interesting things going on in the SEC, brother.
Yep.
So tell me about South Carolina before we wrap up and go to the ACC.
Well, you know, you look at the polls. I mean, they're sitting just outside the top 25 in both polls, 31 in the AP, 30 in the coaches. So they're right in that next group of teams there. You know, if they weren't in the SEC, you'd have them much higher ranked. The biggest change is bringing in Kendall Briles.
Making a lot of money, yeah.
Replacing Shula. You know, if he can get Sellers to do drop back, one read, two read, go. That's where Sellers works best. He can't be sitting in the pocket trying to make decisions in the pocket. Do some design rollouts. Get that, like I said, one, two, go. And I think Browse incorporates a lot of that into his offense. He spreads the team out. They still have Mazio Bennett. They've got Nick Harbor. And, you know, on defense, you know, they're led by Dylan Stewart, who, you know, you read some of the projections. If a team is up there that has a quarterback, you know, Stewart would definitely be in consideration if he produces on the field. I mean, everything he's compared to Jadavian Clowney all over the place, and Clowney went one. You know, it's going to be a matter of, do they have enough depth on the rest of the defense, and can that offense look like a college offense and not whatever they were trying to do last year under Shula?
Well, here's the thing. Gino's going to love this. The course load for Sellers this year is that he is actually doesn't have a class. He works at a driving range as an intern. So he should have time to learn the offense. Just a hunch for me. O-line gave up 43 sacks. If they don't protect the kid better, they're not going to win. The linebackers are good, man. Aronquo and J.R. Johnson are both really good. They're back. They're good. Yep. They're going to be good better in the secondary, I think, a year older. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about this team. If they can be better on third down offensively and clean up the sacks, I think that they have a shot to be 8-4. I don't think they're a better than 8-4 team, but 8-4 seems like it's a real story here.
I mean, 8-4 is a great year, you know, because they're in the SEC.
Yeah.
Their 8-4 could be equivalent to 10-2 in some of these other conferences.
No, you're 100% right, man. You're 100% right. You know, listen, Arkansas is going to be dreadful. You know, there's certain teams that are going to struggle. Auburn will be better, but we don't know what Golish is going to be yet as a coach from South Florida. He never finished higher than fourth in the AAC. I know that there's some high hopes. Listen, you guys know I like Mississippi State. Kamario Taylor is going to be one of the funnest quarterbacks to watch in the entire country. They just don't have enough talent there. Mm-hmm. You know, Missouri, Eli Drinkwitz wins. He's projected to the top 25. They bring in Austin Simmons from Ole Miss to back up to play quarterback. We're going to find out about them. You know, the SEC, Vandy found a way to make you hate them because everybody hated Diego Pavia by the end of the year. How does Vandy football become hated? It shouldn't happen, but it did. So, you know, Florida, you know, listen, Summerall comes in. They have to figure out how to stop the run and get consistent quarterback play. There's a lot of great teams in this league, Kev.
Yeah.
Who are the two that are playing in the championship?
Georgia and Oklahoma.
G, do you have a prediction, or are you going to stick with the gambling?
Georgia and LSU.
And I have Georgia, Tennessee. Okay. So we all have Georgia. We all like Georgia. Don't bet on Georgia because the kiss of death. We'll get more into this as the season's going on. We'll obviously cover the SEC closely. Kevin loves SEC football. We all do, but Kevin lives it, so he'll be your guy in the that's covering it every single week and getting really into it. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yep, had to figure out what weekend I'm going down to Williams-Brice.
You'll be down there having a good time,
of course.
Sandstorm and everything.
It was funny. My son gets a full time job down there. He graduated. First thing he does, season tickets.
It's a smart move, man. Kid knows what he's doing.
Of course he does.
So we're going to go, Gino, from the most complete conference, top to bottom probably, to the conference that's hardest to figure out in the world, even though there is a clear-cut favorite this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that made it to the championship but did not win the conference championship, didn't even play in it last year.
Yeah.
And Kev, I guess there's no way better to start in the ACC than the Miami Hurricanes, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, first off, the ACC's what the hell are they doing? Some of the schools are playing 9-game conference schedules. Some of the schools are playing 8-game conference schedule. What the hell is that?
Conference highlighted by Cal and Stanford and SMU.
What the hell is that?
It's stupid, is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they made it to the championship game. They bring back, you know, they've got Mensah, they've got Malachi Toney. Cooper Barkett.
Well, Mensah, everybody thinks is an upgrade over Jordan Beck. A lot of people loved him at Duke. He won the ACC.
Yep.
I mean, Mensah's good.
He's really good. And in this conference, I mean, yeah, how many other quarterbacks are going to be better than him?
We're going to talk about a couple that people are hoping for, but there's nobody that on paper is better than Mensah right now. Nobody. I mean,
do you like Kevin Jennings or CJ Bailey?
Well, the thing is, Bailey's gotten better both years. He's 6'6". He's got the size. Jennings is the other way. He's a short kid that runs around, finds a way to win when he doesn't throw picks. You know, they're both pretty good. A lot of people are going to sit there and say the Ohio State transfer that went to Louisville, Lincoln Kindholz, is going to be someone to watch. We don't know.
We don't know,
We haven't seen him. He can't get on the field at Ohio State. You know, Vatek brings in Ethan Grunkmeyer, right? I mean, Penn State. We don't know. We're going to find out. He was behind Drew Allen, so we never got to watch him play.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot to look at in this league. But right now, Miami, it's hard not to think Miami, even with all the guys they lost, they still have a lot of great talent back.
I mean, just got the ball to Toney. This kid's electric.
He's flat out electric, right? O-line was great last year. They gave up 11 sacks all year. They lost multiple starters. And they're starting a true freshman, Luke Cantwell, at left tackle. Question mark, right? I mean,
of course.
Obviously, he's going to be gifted to start at Miami at left tackle. But, again, you know, they're going to try to overload him. They're going to try to confuse him. They have two defensive tackles that will be first-round picks this year, barring injury.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they got Justice Scott and Ahmad Moten. They have depth behind them. Damon Wilson comes in from Missouri to be the edge rusher. The linebackers are good. Muhammad Touré and Chase Smith are back. This team on paper is the best in the ACC. It's really hard to argue with it. And like you said, Malachi Toney is just a game breaker that most teams don't have.
Yep.
And he's only a sophomore. So let's get to the elephant in the room, Dabo. Let's get right to it, Kev. Okay, Gino, you'll love this. The quarterback is Vizzini. Mm-hmm. Just like the Princess Bride. Inconceivable. But he's there. He's going to take over for Klubnik, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he the answer? They bring Chad Morris back, who was the OC when Deshaun was there and a little bit with Trevor Lawrence. So they're going to try to find magic there. They did, 12 transfers this year, which is more than they've ever done. They don't
That's a huge chip for Dabo.
It's a lot. The thing about this team is will they be consistent throwing the ball through the air? They got Naheem Burrows, who's a big-time recruit. They were 34% on third down. They're going to have to be better with that. Can Clemson regain something? And it all starts out with week one at LSU. I mean, it's not a great way to start. Dabo's not afraid. He should be, but he's not.
Yeah, you look at the schedule, though. I mean, yeah, they started at LSU. They do have the test week five at home against Miami. What else is on the schedule?
It's the ACC, so there is no schedule. I mean, that's what it comes down to, Ken. I mean, the ACC does not crush you with brutal schedules because there are teams that you feel like they should beat every time. North Carolina, Charleston Southern, Va Tech. They have to go to Florida State. Does that scare anybody? No. Syracuse in paper. No. Duke on the road. No. South Carolina, the end of the season at home is a big game for this team.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech at home. Now listen, we're going to talk about Georgia Tech. We have no idea if they can replace Haynes King. We have no idea. Brent Key has won there. He's won there every single year. But Haynes King has been such a huge part of it.
You know,
it's an interesting rebuild for this team.
I mean, to me, it's got to make Georgia Tech less fun because we loved watching Haynes King play quarterback. Awesome. Yeah, he was so fun to watch.
He was just a great player. All the receivers are transfers. They bring in Hosley back, who's real good, and they get Justice Haynes from Michigan. So you bring in two good running backs. You know the quarterback is, right? Fernando's little brother, Alberto Mendoza, takes over. Now, he's not like his brother because he can run. Right? He can run. He was a backup in Indiana. He's a scrambler more than his brother is. He's big, too, but not as big. O-line only gave up 9 sacks all year last year, but that part of that's Haynes King. So we're going to see if Georgia Tech has a chance to rebound. Kev, is there another team that you noticed in this league that you think has a shot to be competitive?
I'm interested to see what Franklin can do with Va Tech.
And with good reason, because that's going to be interesting.
You know, we know how good a coach he is. And, you know, like I said, you know, you look at the rest of this conference and there's nobody else that really stands. I mean, SMU should, in theory, it should be Miami SMU on paper playing the championship game. But if you're looking for somebody else, Louisville.
Maybe it's going to come down to if Lincoln Kleinholz is the guy. I mean, we don't know. I mean, Louisville brings in two great ends, and they had the best secondary in the conference last year. But they have Lubin and they have A.J. Green. So they have their ends are back. The secondary was really good. There's a couple of guys. Jeff Brohm's offense usually moves it.
Yep.
We're going to find out about Louisville. But Franklin wins. Most interesting thing about Va Tech, Gino, you'll love this. Brent Pry was the former coach. Franklin takes over. Pry stays on as defensive coordinator. You don't see that very often. Coach gets replaced and stays on. Usually they can't wait to leave. They feel embarrassed. Brent Pry staying there to try to do it. They got good talent. He didn't bring a ton of guys from Penn State, but he brought enough. If they can improve – the special teams is awful, which in Beamer land, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They can improve the O-line. They have a shot to be competitive in this league.
I think the two interesting things to look at for the year for the ACC.
Yep.
And I think we said it last year, too. Florida State with Norville.
Yep. He won't last.
At what point? I mean, we thought he may have been gone last year.
Should have been.
And, you know, does he need to go at least 8-4 to keep his job?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to, though. I don't think they're that good.
No. And it's amazing how far Florida State's fallen. I mean, like
the ACC needs Florida State, Miami, Va Tech to be good.
Yep.
And they're not getting that right now.
And the other interesting team because of the head coach is North Carolina.
Belichick.
What can Belichick do second year there?
Listen, the first year was a disaster. The question is, do you think he's got a better chance of doing something great, or do you think he has a better chance of getting fired before the season's out? Gino, what do you think? Because Gino's got a bet.
So I don't think he's getting fired. I'll tell you right now, but, it's a harder schedule, over under is 4.5. And I like the under. I don't think they're winning 4. I don't think he's winning 5.
It's going to be interesting.
we'll know early, you know, week one, they get the opening game in Dublin against TCU.
Yeah.
And you know, by paper, TCU should win that game. But, you know, can UNC at least be competitive and show that they have some hope for this year? Or is this going to be a 38-10 type game that's just going to portend a 3-9 North Carolina season and Belichick resigning at the end of the season?
Stepping down because of health reasons.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you two teams that I think can be dangerous. One's my sleeper here. I like Virginia. And it's not because of the quarterback. They bring in Bo Prabhula, who we all know because he's went from Penn State to Missouri. Now he comes here. They returned their old line. They returned their entire old line, which was good last year. They had to replace Chandler Morris, who was really good. They have three good wide receivers. They're all transferred, but they bring in three real good players. The running backs, they bring in Peyton Lewis from Tennessee. They bring in Jaquale Middlebrook from Middle Tennessee. The D-line, big size talent. They bring in Matthew Forbes White to rush the passer. I like them on both sides of the ball. I think Virginia is going to play in the championship game in the ACC against Miami. The other team that I think is interesting, Gino, are the Cal Golden Bears. And you hate to have Cal be good in the ACC because it's just ridiculous. But they got the quarterback, man. They have the guy to watch. It's all going to come down, I'm going to say the name. We're going to call him JKS like they call him in real life, but I'm going to say the name Jerron Keen Sagapulele. Sagapulele. He's an absolute stud. He goes by JKS. I can say JKS. I don't feel bad about it.
You sound like me trying to pronounce the name.
Oh, my God. It's just it's a long one, but he's good. They have the talent. They had Adam Muhammad from Washington, who's a huge upgrade at running back because they didn't have one last year. Ian Strong comes in from Rutgers. He's a good receiver. The defense, Aaron Hampton comes back. They also bring in two Texas A&M transfers. They bring in two big cornerbacks, one from Ole Miss, one from Georgia, and a safety from Oregon. They were brutal in the fourth quarter. They made too many penalties. But if you're ever stuck and you can't sleep and you put on and you see the ACC after dark at 10 o'clock with a game at Cal, you will be entertained to the bejesus in Tosh LePoy's first season because they have, JKS, who's just one of those guys that's fun to watch. So it may not be great, but he's definitely going to be somebody to watch. But I am high on Virginia, though. I think I like with lines, and they have one. I'll give you a real quick on Wake. Wake is going to be better than last year and have a much worse record because the schedule is that much harder. The team is going to be better. The offense will be better. The defense was good and it's going to stay good. They have four transfers on the O-line, which always makes me nervous. That's the big thing. Ty Clark comes in to lead the way and the running back. Gio Lopez comes in from North Carolina to play quarterback. But Devon Patterson's a stud at safety. Langston Hardy's a beast at defensive end. Seven returning starters on the defensive side. I just don't think they're that good. Gino, who's the over-under bet? Is it just North Carolina or is there another one?
North Carolina under 4.5.
Okay.
Pittsburgh, 7.5. Do you like the over-under?
Pittsburgh's schedule late is exciting. It gets a little bit – for this conference, it gets a little harder. I'm not saying it's brutal, Kev, because nobody's schedule is brutal in this league. But Pittsburgh down the stretch – They go to let's put it this way. They open up with Miami. They play UCF. They play Syracuse and Bryant. They could go 4-0, right? Then they go to Vatech. They get North Carolina. They go to BC. They go to Miami. They get Georgia Tech at home. Florida State at home, winnable. Then they go to Louisville and Cal. So it's like a lot of tough games on the road and a Georgia Tech game at home that's not easy.
Yep.
So is it going to be 8-4 or 7-5 is really the question with Pitt. I think they're a bowl team.
I had them under 7.5.
I think that you're safe there. I think that 7-5 is probably right. Maybe 6-6, 7-5. They have to pull off an upset against one of those road games, in my opinion.
Those are my two unders.
I got you, Kev. Is there any other team you like in this league, or do you want to make a prediction on who you think gets to the championship?
It's Miami, and I'm gonna go chalk Miami SMU.
And I go Miami, Virginia, but we're going to see what happens. But while we're in the ACC, Kev, we might as well touch on the non-ACC ACC team.
Yep.
Fighting Irish of Notre Dame.
Yep. Preseason number 4 ranking. They're projected for 10.5 wins. I've seen.
This team is better than last year's team. It's better.
Yeah. They've got a great offense, defense. They're returning production. 72% of the production is coming back. I mean, the talent's there. There was a borderline playoff team last year. And let's face it, I don't think they're going to get off to the rough start like they did last year, losing the first two. They've got Wisconsin at Lambeau. And
which
Rice.
Is a game that would be exciting if it was Wisconsin that we know. But yeah. It's not that. This is the Luke Fickell Wisconsin teams.
Yeah. You know, let's face it, their schedule's not difficult until they get to mid-October where they travel to BYU.
Home and home, that's a rough game. I mean, that's, you know, playing the Mormons on the road on October 17th is not easy. And then they play Navy, which is not easy.
Navy in Foxborough.
Yep, not easy.
Then they've got Miami.
BC, they get them at home.
BC, which always gives them a tough game.
At home.
And they're home for SMU.
Now, here's the interesting game. Is this the last game? The quarterback for Syracuse is Angeli.
Yep.
Who was 3-1 when he started last year. Now, I don't think Syracuse is very good. I think Fran Brown's team is going to take a step back. But if Angeli's motivated, he could have a very interesting final game of the season. But the way they did it last year, and we discussed it in depth, Gino, it's like they made it where Notre Dame can't really miss the playoff unless they really implode.
Yeah.
It was like the Notre Dame clause. Okay, we're not going to put you in the playoff this year. And you could argue they got robbed. Miami beat them head-to-head, but you could argue they got robbed because they were ahead of them with 1 week to go, and then all of a sudden they passed them.
But Miami should have been ahead of them the whole time.
Yeah, they should have been, but they weren't. But this is a better team, and the fact that C.J. Carr, from everything you're reading, just looks so confident and everything's going right. The big problem with this team is they lose two first-round running backs. Who does that?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, Aeneas Williams, no relation. Didn't even spell the name the same way. But he takes over a running back. But they lose two first-round picks who both look like real studs. The old line is – Athlon says it's the best offensive line of football. College football, elite talent, elite depth, high ceilings. I mean, this offense is going to be good. And then on the other side, you say, okay, Leonard Moore is the best cornerback in college football. He's on that side of the ball. Tiani Gray is immovable. He's 336 pounds of tackle. They're not going to move him. Francis Brew comes in from Pitt to help. I mean, they are stacked. This is a really, really, really good team all around. Schedule's easy outside of BYU, Miami, maybe SMU. Those are the – I mean –
Yeah,
if they do worse than 10-2, it'll be shocking. I'd be stunned if they're not 11-1. I think they're going to be better than Miami this year too. I think that this is an 11-win team, Jay.
That schedule, you have to go 11-1, don't you?
I think the toughest game is the Provo game. I think the game in Provo is brutal.
Yeah, on the road. Yeah,
I mean, normally you say Wisconsin at Lambeau would be amazing, but now who's into it? You know, it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah,
but ACC, listen, we'll get more into it again as the season goes on. Not as in-depth as the SEC because there's a lot of teams here that aren't going to have any shot of getting into the playoff. If the ACC gets two teams, it's a big deal. Last year they did not. The champion did not get in. Duke won it. They did not get in. So we're going to find out what happens. And Georgia Tech was pretty good. There were some pretty good teams last year. But this until Florida State and Virginia Tech – get themselves right. And Virginia Tech, I think, is on the right path, just like you do.
Yep.
The ACC is going to be the fourth best conference in college football.
Yep.
Anything else before we wrap up the ACC preview and Notre Dame preview?
I'm good there.
Okay, I got a couple of buried treasures for you boys. And they're all baseball related, but I just want to throw them out at you because I thought they were fun. First, a trivia question. Who's the only player with 3,000 hits, a 300 batting average, 300 home runs, and 300 stolen bases? Kevin.
I'm sorry, one more time?
3,000 hits, 300 home runs, 300 stolen bases, and a 300 average. I'll ask it one more time for Kevin.
Sorry, 3,000
hits, a 300 batting average, 300 homers, and 300 stolen bases. One player has achieved this.
Ricky?
Nope.
Craig Biggio?
Nope. Willie Mays, boys. Willie Mays.
Willie Mays.
He had 3,293 hits. He had a 301 batting average, 660 homers, and 339 stolen bases.
I tend to go away from the greatest players of all time when you bring up.
I know, because I try not to give you that.
Your questions like this. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm going to give you guys an Urban Shocker. You know who Urban Shocker was?
Oh, yeah. Yankee, right?
Absolutely. Won 18 games for the 27 Yankees, and he pitched with a heart ailment. It was quietly failing him the entire season. He had four straight 20-win seasons with the St. Louis Browns before joining the 27 Yankees on what they say is the greatest team ever assembled. He pitched with managing a serious heart condition for years, reportedly sleeping, sitting upright some nights just to breathe comfortably, all while continuing to take the mound every fourth day like nothing was wrong. His performance declined sharply in 28. The Yankees released him that summer. It became clear something was wrong. He died in September at just 37 years old. But Urban Shocker slept sitting up. But he still won all those games for those Yankees.
Unbelievable. Wow.
The last one I'm going to give you guys is, do you know why umpire tosses out scuffed baseballs every time a ball hits the dirt? Well, it's a story that we covered a couple of weeks ago, actually. Go ahead.
It's not because of Carl Mays, is it?
It is. Exactly because of Carl Mays.
Oh, wow.
August 16, 1920, Cleveland and the Yankees and the White Sox are all in the three-game race. Fifth inning, Cleveland leads 3-0. Chapman leads off. Chapman's 29. He's a 9-year veteran, hitting 303. And he's actually planned to retire, which I did not know. Chapman was calling it a career. Recently married, indicated he wanted to retire and enjoyed time with his wife. And on the mound, Carl Mays, a submarine pitcher, released the ball from down near his shoe tops. Had a uniquely hard ball to pick up. The conditions were a little bit dark, getting dark, and the balls used to stay in play very long. So sometimes you didn't pick up the ball because it wasn't clear. And, you know, he got hit. It became an issue. Obviously he died. We talked about the guy that replaced him, a couple of weeks ago. Thousands of mourners filled St. John of the Evangelist Church in Cleveland for his funeral, and baseball changed the rule. Umpires were instructed to remove dirty balls from play and replace them with clean ones. That's the rule that we still watch today. The spitball and other doctored pitches were banned after the 20 season, and Chapman was a big part of the reason why. His death, although cited for decades, as the clearest argument for batting helmets, though the sport took a mere 30 years to require him after that. There's an ending to Cleveland season two. We talked about it because Joe Sewell came up and he became the hardest guy ever to strike out and the whole thing. And then there was Carl Mays. He was never charged with anything. And he always maintained that the pitch was a strike. And, just one of those things. The two men's lives, he's not in the Hall of Fame. A lot of people believe that's why. Mays was really good. He went on to win 200 games. But because of that incident, they say that's why he didn't get into the Hall of Fame. He said the pitch was a strike, and he lived that afternoon for the next 50 years. Two men's lives ended that day in very different ways. And that's the story. But great guest, Kev. And those are our little buried treasures for the week. Any other final comments, boys? Anything you want to touch on before we wrap this shindig up?
Nope.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren, Kevin, Gino, talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we're talking football already here in the middle of August. The summer has flown by. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you can. We posting a lot on social. You're going to see a lot more of it as football's getting started. You're going to see a lot more of it as baseball gets into the pennant races. So we'll be posting a ton of stuff. We ask you to like it, follow it. If you don't like it, pretend you like it anyway. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.